10 hours would pass in the learning chamber, but only 2 would have passed when I was returned to bed. These creatures are not only able to traverse dimensions, but distort time as well. After the lesson, I guess I was sort of expecting, maybe even looking forward to, the reward part. They had me pretty well trained by that time. Instead, on the screen before me flashed pages upon pages of text. Not alien text, mind you, paragraphs upon paragraphs in quite legible and understandable American English. Maybe 20 pages worth, I'd estimate. I began to read. It didn't take long to realize that I was reading a story about the life of a close friend of mine. I was enthralled. The text described intimate details of his life I'd not known. It began with his name, where he was born, where he went to school, his childhood likes and dislikes, his teenage years and so on. I read page after page right through to the present. The story didn't stop there, though. It continued into the future, dealing with it as though it had already happened. I was pretty amazed, but I was even more stunned with what happened next. After I had read all the pages, 2 more pages appeared on the wall screen to the right of the pages I had just read. These were not in English, but in the alien language I was learning. The stunning fact was that I could comprehend what the alien symbols said. Wow! I couldn't help but shout. Wow! Moreover, this alien text described the exact same information I'd just read about my friend in English. Instead of 20 pages, though, it took only half a page of alien script. Then another page appeared. This page had the alien alphabet in what seemed like a shorthand version. For example, it showed the letter A, then 86, the boss wants to see you next to it, the alien's version of A, then next to that a shorthand version of the letter A. Then another page appeared with one single symbol on it about the size of a 50-cent piece. After looking at this symbol, I almost fainted with amazement. This one single small symbol that I could read in a matter of a few seconds, housed 20 pages of detailed information in English. See figure 13, page 88, incredible. Thinking back on it, it seems impossible. I don't know quite how it works, but it does. Were there other aspects of this language that I had not picked up on yet? Dimensional quirks and symbologies? Depths and intonations only telepathic mental processing could properly decode? I honestly don't know. All I knew was what it must feel like to a kid when he not only learns to read, but when the words fall away and a magical story appears in his head. A voice sounded in my head, "You will learn this. You mean you want me to learn the short version of your alphabet?" "Yes, why?" I got no response. "Why?" I demanded. I guess by then, the conditioning kind of let loose. Up until then, I was just absorbed in the experience. However, I'd had enough freedom in North Carolina to regain some of my mental independence. The true me, a rebel at heart, got into the game. "Why? Why me?" I demand an answer, "You bastards." My mouth froze. They'd paralyzed it. For all the good it would do. "Why me? Why me?" I screamed the outrage again, blasting with my mind. Yeah, sure, they could lock up my mouth, but hell if they could shut down my mind. They'd have to kill me first. I was furious. 87, the keepers, the boss wants to see you, and I knew they could hear me, because they read my mind and I think I was learning telepathy as well. "Why me? Why me?" I tapped my right forefinger hard and loud on the table screen and continued my mental scream. Suddenly, the 2 alien drones morphed into large American-style cops. No riot gear, just your garden-variety blue uniforms, polished shoes, cap and scowl, all American police officers. I don't know what they're thinking when they do this, tapping into my sense of authority. Are they trying to manipulate and control me with my cultural conditioning? It was almost laughable, about as subtle as a sledgehammer in an egg house. So these alien cops were glaring at me, and I could hear one of them bore into my brain with a telepathic command, a constant repetition of "No. I've always tried to be a law-abiding citizen, and I do respect officers of the law." Clearly, though, these were nothing of the sort, not really. I honestly wished they were. I'd ask them to arrest the damned supervisor for kidnapping. You don't scare me. I glared right back. Again a morphing, this time into a couple of military policemen of the nasty, ham-shouldered marine persuasion, complete with generic crew cuts. I shook my head. That doesn't scare me. I think I even managed to chuckle. Again the images wavered, then transformed, this time into two fully dressed army generals laden with medals. Bullshit. I blasted at them with my mind. I just kept on tapping that finger, and thinking, why me? Why me? Every few seconds, I thought, hey, you bozos. I'm just going to keep on tapping and asking why me? Until you answer. Nothing. Mexican standoff. This didn't last too long, though, because very soon indeed I felt an overbearing mental presence swarm into the room. The thing almost smelled of power, of swelling symphonic music, of a mighty and dominant presence. You get that feeling sometimes with strong, charismatic individuals, and I certainly recognized the telltale signs of this thing. 88, 89, the keepers. It was the supervisor. I didn't see him right away, but I sure could feel him. I could sense him staring down at my head and I thought, damn, you are powerful. I could feel him probing through my mind. I stopped the tapping. Write your question out the way we taught you. Only then will we answer. I wanted that answer. I wanted that answer very badly. Still, there was a part of me that wanted to resist. I could feel my mouth loosen. I could speak again, and speak I did. Now let me make sure I understand this. If I were to write the question in the style you taught me, you'll answer my question? I got no response, yet I could sense his strong presence lurking over me in an overbearing, demanding fashion. Okay, I thought, someone's got to give. I'll try it. I placed my finger on the screen. I framed my question in my head. I allowed my finger to move. To my astonishment, it began to write out my question. Why me? Only it didn't come out like that. It came out in alien hieroglyphics. I recovered and made my demand again. Okay. There it is. You promised to answer my question. They answered the question, all right, but not in the way I had expected. Chapter 11, Family History. I'm afraid the alien's answer to that fateful question left me with even more questions. Why me? Why had these creatures from some other star system, or some other dimension, at least from somewhere else far beyond my comprehension, zeroed in on Jim Sparks? Why had they focused in on an ordinary real estate dealer for their obscure and, quite frankly, bizarre purposes? I guess that's what I meant when I said, why me? And I suspect that unless you're a NASA official or George Norrie, king of nighttime radio, you'd be asking that question of aliens as well, if you'd found yourself in my position. I had a burning need to know, though, even sitting there, uprooted from my North Carolina booze binge. I guess that question was the overriding thing in my mind. The aliens did not answer the question with language or telepathy, writing or anything symbolic. I'll describe what happened next in the best detail I can remember, so you can draw your own conclusions. Tell me. I demanded again. Answer my question, like you promised. I've written it out, just like you wanted. Now imagine you're sitting there with me and right out in front of you is empty space, air and alienness, fortunately breathable and temperate enough for survival. This air just, 90, 91, the keepers kind of frizzles and grows opaque. Then it lights up, with a black's border. I guess you can imagine what it's like when you're watching something like this in a movie or on television and you're thinking, cool, these are some great special effects. But when you're actually there, believe me, it's nothing like anything cinematic. It's like a portal opened up in that room, a large passageway into somewhere else. A holographic scene appeared, complete with full motion about 3 or 4 feet in front of me. It was rich in detail, complete with dimension and color. Yet there was no sound and the scene was faintly transparent. It looked like a World War II scene. I say that because it was definitely a war scene, with humans in military uniform. Why do I say we? Well, I may not have had any media exposure to extraterrestrials, but I have seen pictures of Nazis before. These Nazi officers wore dark uniforms, and there were soldiers posted at the doors of a room. The group I came to see was not merely Germans, there were men in Italian uniforms as well. Maps and clipboards were strewn across the table, along with cups of coffee and espresso, and these officers were talking and pointing. The Italians were speaking animatedly with lots of gestures. I sat there in that alien room, staring at this scene suspended in the middle of the room, and a slow shiver went up my back. This scene was hauntingly familiar. I felt deja vu stronger than I'd ever felt it before. It was definitely as if I'd been in this place before. As I studied it carefully, I could almost taste the espresso and smell the stale, male sweat from those uniforms. My gaze fixed on one of the Italian officers and electricity ran up and down my back. 92, family history cripes. This guy looked like me, no way. I thought, but as I studied him closer as he argued with a Nazi commander, I couldn't help but see that chin, that nose, those dark eyes and eyebrows, they were formed just like mine. The hair was even curly in just the way mine is, only shorter. He was my height, my weight, and the way he was wagging that finger and using his arms was just like me. I wondered what my captors were trying to say with all this. As you know, I'm from Italian stock, but why were they sticking me in a World War II scene? Figure 14, Jim first seeing the WW2 street scene, surely this couldn't be an actual historical scene. It had to be some kind of visual trick, just like that morphing of the drones into human cops. 93, The Keepers, family history dead past. The scene tightened in focus and the viewpoint moved in closer. From what little I know of historical costume, I'd say that the scene was placed in about the mid-19th century. Again, although the scene was vibrantly colorful, and I could almost smell that smoke, there was a translucency about the image, and I could vaguely make out the details of the corner of the room through it. Why a Victorian factory? Again my eyes were drawn to a figure in the scene. It was a man, again, who looked like me, only dressed in a black suit, a shiny black top hat and mutton chop whiskers. He had a bluff and proprietary sense about him. I sensed that he was the owner of the factory. Yes, this guy looked like me, I thought, but he sure wasn't me. Figure 15, detailed image of a WW2 hologram. Still, as I watched this military meeting, I couldn't help but have strange emotions indeed. World War II? These were some of the darkest days of the 20th century. While looking at my image working with the Nazis, thinking about all the death and destruction, I started feeling implicated somehow. I started feeling guilt and shame for being a part of the human race that would inflict that kind of horror. I had to forcibly remind myself that there was no direct involvement on my part. I was born years after the end of WII, right? Why was I being shown a guy in a uniform that looked like me? This suspended scene dissolved, to be replaced by another scene fading into view, the gates of a factory. Surrounding them were the ornate hallmarks of Victorian masonry. Beyond the gates I saw smokestacks and a dark grim haze of clouds. A group of men in long coats and hats stood outside this factory, talking to one another. A horse and buggy trot. 94, figure 16, Jim's image as a Victorian-era factory owner. 95, The Keepers more quickly this time, as though realizing somehow I was getting a grip on what was happening here. This scene faded and another took its place. The new scene depicted a small village on a green hillside, which was a pleasant place along a seashore. Gulls swooped on a breeze. From the style of the houses in the village and the total lack of technology, my best guess was that this time period was around the 15th or 16th century. The scene swerved, and I noticed a man and a woman in a field, working a crop with crude farm tools. Again, there was a familiarity to the looks of the man, although nothing as similar as that World War II scene. Farmy LYHISTORI, have you been following my physical family line? I wrote. As soon as I finished scribbling this out, I got an answer. Yes. Look. As the village scene faded away, another scene appeared, this one depicting the interior of a medieval inn. Men and women surrounded a large, roughly built wooden table drinking what looked like wine from pewter goblets. I'm no history expert, but the time period seemed earlier than that village scene, perhaps anywhere from the 6th to the 12th century. And yep, there at the table was a guy that had a resemblance to me. Or at least I felt a kinship to him. Maybe these resemblances were more of a visual translation of a sense of genetic kinship, or maybe this was the way the aliens were highlighting individuals in these scenes. I find this to be a more logical explanation. Figure 17, Jim's image in a 15th or 16th century field. I had another question. Rather than go through the rigmarole of vocally or even mentally requesting an answer, I just went straight to the screen. Again, I got a thrill as my fingers seemed to know the proper characters to express my question. 96, Figure 18, Jim's ancestor drinking at a medieval inn. 97, the keepers. The guy that looked like me was wearing some kind of cloth or leather hat, which was slightly pointed and drooped to the side. He was drinking lots of wine and laughing. I can't tell you how bizarre this was. I couldn't help but laugh, and it felt good to have laughter come out of my unparalyzed mouth. Our shared laughter sounded odd, echoing in that alien room, but it was a human sound, and I cherished it. The medieval scene disappeared, to be replaced by another. Farmy Lyhistori some were sitting side by side on multi-level benches or bleachers. These men seemed to be having a debate of some sort, and from their facial expressions I could tell the topic was important. I examined the men's faces, and sure enough, there was a guy that looked like me. He was just sitting and listening to others speak. I shook my head and then put my forefinger down to the screen. Again, in the written alien script I wrote out my question, "Have you really followed my family line that far back? Look. When these star people communicate, they don't waste words." Another scene took the place of the Roman Senate. This time I saw an African savanna with patches of trees. I could almost feel the heat, and smell the stink. The scene pushed into, Figure 19, Jim's ancestor listening in the Roman Senate. I saw buildings, white buildings with classical lines. Buildings of a city on a series of hills. I knew it was early Rome. The scene shifted to one of columns, steps and beautiful statues. This scene seemed to be of the Roman Senate. A large hall or reception area was populated by about 20 men wearing togas or white robes of other sorts. Some were standing, and 98, Figure 20, Jim's ancestors living on the savannah. 99, the keepers focus on a group of ape-like creatures, and as the picture cleared I could see they were actually closer to humans than apes. Thank God none of them looked like me. Just because I didn't see a temperamental Italian didn't mean I didn't get the message. My anger flared. Bullshit. I shouted. Bullshit. You guys are trying to tell me that you had something to do with human evolution. I got no response. I was so pissed, though, I sure didn't feel like writing out the question. I just sat there and stewed. They seemed to sense my rage, and they left me alone for a little bit. I was clear-headed but angry. Then, instead of answering any questions, they made their presentation again, though this time in written form, in their language. I watched it and found that, again, I could comprehend it, and it all underlined their message: we've been around for a while. We've been working on your personal family line. We know you well. Humans are ours. Then acceleration, and I was whooshed back to North Carolina. Chapter 12. The watchers in the Lincoln getting pulled into a lesson again was no easy thing for me, and as soon as I woke up back in my North Carolina hotel room and thought, I'm not safe anywhere, I crawled right back into the bottle. I stayed in North Carolina two more weeks, drinking. When I got back to Texas I continued drinking about 3 more months, but then one morning I woke up after an abduction, and I thought, that's it. Drinking alcohol is no solution. I knew I wasn't an alcoholic, I didn't need the booze physically, I was just trying to escape. So there and then, I made a decision: I have to face all this cold sober, stare it down, live with it. It was an important step. Drinking was probably hindering my ability to cope. I don't feel guilty about resorting to alcohol, I just feel smarter now. My advice to my fellow abductees is, alcohol does not help you, drugs do not help you, running does not help you, only other human beings can help you. Getting understanding and compassionate people around you is what helps. I guess that's true with everything, and I guess that's what I was looking for then, but I sure wasn't finding it. When I got back from North Carolina in June 1989, one was a wreck. Teresa was gone. She'd taken a leave of absence from work and simply wasn't around. I thought this was probably a good idea. I thought it may also have been a leave of absence from our marriage, which was good. I needed to work all this mess through, figure out what was happening and learn 101, 100, the keepers to deal with it. You may be thinking at this point that all this was deadly serious and without a shred of humor, but it wasn't. As soon as I got home, I shocked the local security guard and mailman, and I don't blame them. I'd weighed 160 pounds the last time they'd seen me, and I was probably down to 130 or 125 pounds. I was haggard, unshaven, and scruffy as hell. I probably looked a little like Howard Hughes in his last horrible years in Las Vegas. As I was getting my mail, my neighbor, a gregarious guy named Larry, came out and took one look at me and just stared, with his mouth open. I looked back at him. "Aliens," I said. The ludicrousness of the whole situation was juxtaposed against my suburban home and the everyday arrival of my mail, so I just told him the reason, pure and simple. "What?" I shook my head, astonished at myself. "Never mind, Larry was the accountant type who enjoyed conversation with me because I was more of a chance taker or rebel than he was, and he was curious." Our first conversation had been short, but it didn't take me long before he craved conversation with me to learn my skills of marketing and selling. "Really," Larry said, "tell me what's going on. If I tell you, you're just going to think I've gone crazy." "No, I won't. I promise." I shrugged, too tired to object. "Well, you asked for it. Come on in and I'll make us some iced tea." I figured after about 10 minutes of my story he would probably leave. I filled his ears with 40 minutes worth of summarized alien abductions. I even walked him into the guest room and presented one of the featured props, the guest room window that the aliens walked me through. I went into some detail as to how the acceleration worked, and how it felt. Larry honestly seemed to pay attention and accept what I was saying. Most people either got frightened or got a "yeah, sure, goofball" look in their eyes. Not Larry. 102. The watchers in the Lincoln. When I finished, I asked the golden question, not knowing what to expect. "Well, what do you think?" "I believe you." "The same thing happened to my cousin. You could have knocked me over with a feather." "Are you serious?" "Not only am I serious," Larry said, "but I can help you." "What do you mean by, help me?" "I know how to make all this stop," he announced.
"How?"
Larry smiled. "Don't you worry about it. I'll take care of it. I'm off duty at work just before dark. When my shift is over, I'll be back, and I'll take care of your problem." I think he patted my back comfortingly. I was open to anything, but still it sounded too simple. "Just like that?" "Yes, don't worry. I know what to do." I just sat there, stunned, thinking, could it be this simple? Have I actually found someone who could put an end to this? As the day wore on, I made listless stabs at trying to get my business back into order, periodically wondering if maybe Larry was humoring me. Maybe he was off to get a paddy wagon and professional mental experts. On the other hand, he was a pretty reliable, steady guy. He'd always been a good subdivision security guard and had helped me out before. Larry was a police officer and a good one, the kind you could trust. So maybe he really meant what he said. And if he came back with a good shrink, well, I was open to just about anything. 30 minutes before dark, Larry the cop was knocking at the door. I opened it, and he was there, smiling sympathetically, alone. In his arms he held a carton of eggs, a cloth doll with a crucifix around its neck, and a bottle of water. "It's always best to do these things just before dark on a Sunday," Larry announced as he brushed past me. 103. The keepers, Tewatchersintheleenkoln, what things? It didn't look like things I'd like much, but you know, how can you say no to a burly, cocksure cop? First of all, Jim, take me to your guest room window, Larry said confidently. What for? You'll see. I led him to the guest room. He set the doll on the windowsill, facing it and its crucifix toward the outside. What did you do that for? I asked. To ward off the evil spirits coming through the window, he said with a determined of course emphasis. I'd pretty much figured that Larry was up to some kind of voodoo hoodoo, and the thought of what my drones and supervisor would make of all this kind of struck me as damned funny. I wanted to burst out laughing, but I managed to contain myself. Larry was so sincere about this, that I was sure either I would hurt his feelings if I laughed, or maybe even get him angry. What's the little bottle of water for? I asked. It's holy water, he explained. Larry started sprinkling that water all through the house. As this ceremony proceeded, I just stood there thinking that I was witnessing an example of precisely why extraterrestrials just don't land on the White House lawn and say, "Hi, we're here." So Larry drenched the house with water. Then he grabbed that carton of eggs. "Let's go outside," he said. I followed him, not saying a word. On the lawn, he walked around the perimeter of the house, placing eggs one at a time right up against the walls. Can you picture this? We're talking about a guy who looks like the Night of the Living Dead warmed over, following a cop placing eggs, around a house. Then Larry said in a serious, confident tone, "The eggs should deter evil spirits from walking through the walls. The doll with the cross should stop them from coming through the 104 window. Now if they are still determined enough to somehow get in, they should leave right away because they can't stand the holy water." I didn't want to offend Larry, so I acted interested. I asked him where he got the idea to do something like this. He told me that his family heritage was Mexican Indian. These sorts of remedies, he claimed, had been in his family for generations. Well, I'd said aliens. Obviously, he interpreted aliens as manifestations of evil spirits. If I said that they were extraterrestrials now, he probably would have just nodded his head sagely and said, "Of course they're extraterrestrials. They're from hell." Now mind you, I have no intention here, or there with Larry, or anywhere for that matter, of demeaning anyone's beliefs, because I realize how important a person's spiritual philosophy is. On the other hand, I don't have a problem with distinguishing religious entities, including superstitious critters, and ETs. I'll tell you, humans would far prefer to believe in anything other than the fact that there is advanced non-human intelligence secretly interacting with us. Still, just because I knew my tormentors were extraterrestrial didn't mean I was dealing with it particularly well. I must say, I got a chuckle out of Larry's performance. And more than that, I appreciated his help. Maybe those eggs did keep the evil spirits away, at least for 2 days. Then a disturbing thing happened that did not feature extraterrestrials, but had everything to do with them. If you've read other writings about UFOs or aliens, or even if you only see movies or have watched X-Files, you'll know about the Men in Black. Well, let's just say here that I've met some guys that are awfully similar. 2 days after Larry put his strange barrier blessing on my house, I was looking out of my window. It was morning, and for some reason I had a strange sense that there was something out there. Parked across the street from my house was a late model Lincoln sedan. Two men sat inside. I had the unsettling feeling that the two men were watching my house and watching me. 105, the keepers. Tewatchersintheleenkoln, I immediately caught myself. "Whoa, guy," I thought. "You're getting kind of paranoid here, aren't you?" Still, I felt uneasy. I went back to trying to get my business back together, but I looked out every hour or so to see if that car was still there. It was. 8 hours after the first sighting, the car was still there, complete with its men. And I still felt weird about the whole thing. I mean, just because I was paranoid didn't mean these guys weren't after me, to paraphrase a joke. I figured that if these guys were really here for me, The most logical thing to do next would be to go to the store to see if they would follow. Sure enough, when I got in my car and headed for the store, they followed, hanging about a half a block behind. I went to a store, which I figured would be a safe place.